I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
D&D Versus is a spooky, scary, vile, and violent podcast intended for mature listeners. Content warnings can be found in the episode description.
Okay, welcome back to D&D Versus. I am your Dungeon Master, Yanata Blue, and this is the D&D actual play adventure where one DM with a heart takes on one player with however many bones are in the human body. I don't know off the top of my head, actually. Welcome back to the show, Cody Miller.
Very apropos talking about bones in the human body.
Yeah, so if you could maybe take that segue as a jumping pad to tell us a little bit about Norm and his adventure in the world he came from to start us off.
Yep, as listeners who listened to the last episode might have realized, Norm is not your typical elf or not your typical mortal. He is a skeleton who has to borrow skins from individuals for good and apply resin to them to ensure that they still look vibrant. He doesn't always know customs of places, but he is good-natured and is a postmaster general in his land.
Well, he certainly is going to have to deal with some of the challenges that a lot of mailmen in our world face today, but we'll get to that in a moment. First, a recap for last episode. Our adventure last episode started with Silvo leaving the Sanctuary of the Underdark with Miss Cleo, with Captain Ludlow, and with Groucho in tow, and unfortunately being unable to navigate through the Underdark to find the refugees they were trying to catch up to, found himself in a sticky situation in a chapel on the edge of the city of Panda, where he faced off against some scary things that had been transformed by a ritual. Apparently a nameless man, or at least a man whose name they did not manage to get, and Father Tully were performing a ritual to bring Father onto the scene. Silvo died, sacrificing himself so his friends could leave, and several hours later, out came Norm, who Miss Cleo was waiting for him, informed him that Captain Ludlow and Groucho had heard the call of a Mr. Beepo, and they decided to follow beautiful music being played on the kazoo into the woods, where Norm met Liliana, a forest deity who referred to Mr. Beepo as her child, informed Norm that his companions, Captain Ludlow and Groucho, had been apprehended by ne'er-do-wells who were planning on selling them into slavery, and promised that if Norm could help her with a task, it would aid them both and would give Norm a special tool that would help him with rescuing his friends. Norm, for agreeing to do so, you were transported with a magical tap of a kazoo onto your nostrils that flipped your world upside down and landed you in a forest very much like the one that you left, but this one infested with dark vines, poisonous-looking mushrooms and spikes and thorns, with a keep off in the distance. And Liliana promised to tell you exactly what she needs. So that's where we're going to begin. Liliana points at the fortress and says, "My ex-brother-in-law lives there. He's a nice enough guy, but, you know, he and my sister broke up, and he's still holding on to a couple of things of hers, and I'm hoping that you might be able to go in there and get them out, because I don't think it's a good idea if I go in there, given the relationship is still very much on the rocks. He doesn't seem like he's quite gotten over it, so how does that sound?"
How does someone become an ex-brother-in-law, exactly?
Oh, well, you know, he was married to my sister, and now they're not. And she moved out, but unfortunately, he kept a couple of her things, and He's been kind of difficult to reach lately. He hasn't been doing a very good job of, you know, responding and communicating in a healthy fashion, so it's been kind of tough for her to get her last bits of belongings from him. So we're just hoping that you can act as sort of a mediator, a repo man, as it were.
Okay, that doesn't sound too difficult.
No, it really shouldn't be. So the two things are, and one of them you get to keep. The first one is a pan flute. And this pan flute gives you a certain, let's just say, it helps mellow out creatures that aren't human, but are intelligent. So it'll come in handy for you, especially in vanilla. And she kind of gives a look and says, you don't know much about vanilla, do you? I feel like...
more of a chocolate man myself.
Okay, well, chocolate's another city on the other side, on a different continent, but vanilla is a city that happens to be ruled over by a dragon, and it happens to be ruled over by and kind of run by three different castes of dragonborn. So, as far as the dragons are concerned and the other sort of dragon wormlings and whatnot, the pan flute will come in handy. It'll definitely be useful with the dragons. Maybe not the dragonborn, but the dragons themselves. So, that's my promise to you. You can keep that pan flute. As far as what I do need you to get for my sister's dog is being kept by him, and he refuses to give her back.
What type of dog is it? Like one of those, small floofy things? Or like a Doberman?
And at this, she kind of, like, cringes a little bit. Like, now you finally caught her. And she clearly doesn't want to lie to you, so she kind of winces a little bit and says, it's a three-headed hellhound?
Well, I gotta admit, I'm not entirely in love with the sound of that, but hey, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of canines tend to be the same. You feed them, you give them some pets, and, you know, they're good to go.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you kind of are well-equipped for appeasing a, you know, bloodthirsty hellhound. If you could spare a femur or maybe, you know, a tibia or something like that, you know, in a pinch.
Well, there's not a lot I can spare in terms of... I don't actually know what those words are, but I'll try to spare them.
Okay, well, so he has the canine currently patrolling the yard surrounding the keep, so you could try to sneak past it, or there's kind of a river that passes through the keep itself that you could use to try to sneak in, maybe, into the basement. Or, you know, with all this overgrowth from whatever's being caused by some kind of an incursion, you know, and she kind of looks at you and smiles half-heartedly and says, Augie has gotten into a lot of different hobbies to kind of attempt to cope with the breakup, and I think that these vines and whatever this is, and she kind of like taps it and kind of goes, ugh, like you see her actually shiver at contact with the black vine. She says, whatever this is might have been caused by one of his little magical experiments. So...
oh, he runs magical experiments.
Yeah, knowledge is kind of his thing. He loves learning things, so it makes him, you know, very active and everything like that. But it seems like he kind of turned that into overdrive as a coping mechanism, and he may be coping in some less than healthy ways for the things around him.
Well, I'd love to say I'm something of a scientist myself, but that isn't entirely truthful, so I'll adjust to the threats as they appear. That's sort of my deal.
Okay, well, as soon as you collect the items, you know, you just need to release my sister's dog, and he'll find his way back once he's unchained. He's currently bound by a chain that prevents him from jumping planes. But once you release him, he'll find his way home, and once you come here, you can play that flute in this clearing, and it'll bring you back to your plane. Sound good?
Yeah, well, hopefully it's as easy as that.
All right. And with that, she gives you a pat on the back, and she takes a step backwards. And she says, any last questions before I let you go?
Your ex-brother-in-law, generally hospitable guy, you know, is he really aghast at the idea of people entering his property? Like, what should I be expecting there?
She thinks about it for a second. He never used to be that type of person. So I think so long as you're not overly aggressive and threatening, he should be fine. He also has a friend that kind of lives with him, is kind of like a personal assistant, valet, like housekeeper type of person. If you can track him down, he might be a little bit more amenable to providing you an introduction to make sure that that goes smoothly, but his name is Verfall. I don't know where he would be, but, you know, he's usually somewhere around the house if Augie is home, too.
Verfall, huh?
Yep, that's his name. He's a little busy automaton. He's a little busybody.
Ah, okay, well, I best hop to it, then.
All right, I'll be waiting here. So, give me a perception or investigation roll as you survey the approach to the keep.
That also will be a 17.
So, with a 17, you have a pretty good lay of the land. You're on an elevated slope that puts you just a little bit above the height of the roof. So, you can definitely see the river. It's not even so much a river, it's more of a creek that sort of cuts into the property underneath one of the walls and disappears under the property itself, and then reemerges on the opposite side. So it's flowing towards you. So if you were to go to the closest point in the river, you would have to swim upstream to get underneath the wall and underneath the keep itself. Or you could go the circuitous route and go around and swim downstream with it.
I was going to say the less swimming, the better for Norm.
Okay. So you can also make out that on the, you're currently facing it from the south, on the sort of northwestern side, you can see that there are some trees that are overhanging with these sort of noxious looking vines and mushrooms. But because of the growth, it's actually caused the trees to lean in such a way that they are hanging over the wall. So you could climb up the tree and use it either to jump onto the rooftop of the building itself with a good enough jump, or to at least drop into the yard. With your perception, you can also see that, yes, there is an enormous three-headed dog. It's not, like, gigantic, but it would be able to lick you in your face without having to jump off of its four legs, so it's a large dog. But this thing is currently patrolling the yard. You can see that it has an enormous long black chain tied around the base of its three necks. And the chain is long enough that the dog is able to make a circumference around the perimeter of the building and come back to the post, but the chain doesn't have any more give than that. So currently, you can see that the dog is coming around the northwestern corner of the building, and it has all of the slack of its chain. So it's doubling back to where the post is on the southwestern corner, and that'll mean that it has its full length of chain that could wrap around the perimeter. In case you're waiting for it to maybe tie itself up or something like that, you can observe its movement and see when that opportune time might be. But do you have any questions about what you're observing or anything else I may not have pointed out?
Do I have visibility on what the chain is connected to on the other side?
So the chain is connected to a sort of like bolt-on piece that is attached to the wall of the exterior building.
Got it. And is that bolt more on the swimming side or on the climb over tree side?
That bolt is farther from the climb over tree side, so it's down the building is more of a rectangle than a square, so it's down the long ways from the tree, but it's up the short way from the swimming option.
Well, I think Norm would still go for the trees.
Okay, so you take a route through the woods, and just give me a dex save to start.
That one.
Okay, so with a nat 1, Norm is not used to having to be, you know, super careful about this sort of thing, because normally the skins and things like that he's wearing aren't, you know, living things. But Abby very quickly scolds you. And goes, hey, listen, I'm doing my best here. I'm trying to protect you from the elements and from, you know, people being freaked out by your bony face. And you're just getting me torn up. These vines are no joke, and they sting. I don't like them. They're angry. They're so angry. Do you not feel how angry they are?
Well, not really. I'm not their biggest fan either, but we gotta make do, man.
And Abby says,
well, yeah, but I mean, there's only so much I can make do with, and hey.
And so you take 9 poison damage. I do believe Norm has resistance to poison just because of his unique biology.
He is invulnerable to poison.
Oh, well. You're not hurt by it, but Abby, definitely, you can feel it seeping through. You can feel the pressure of it as if, you know, your bones are being squeezed very hard as Abby, like, passes, as the poison passes through Abby onto you. But Abby just says, oh, wow, okay. Well, if it's not a problem for you, I'm just gonna, if it's all right, I'm just gonna let you handle this. And you kind of feel Abby retract from your extremities for the time being, as you continue to sort of plod clumsily through the vines and the thorns and everything like that. So they're scratching at your exposed bones now, but you're not taking any damage from it.
All right.
As you reach the tree that was leaning over because of the vines that are heavily pulling it towards the yard, give me either athletics or acrobatics for Norm clambering up the tree.
The best of those would be a 6 athletics roll.
Okay.
Sorry, acrobatics.
Okay, so with a 6 acrobatics, you start to monkey climb your way up the tree because it's leaning at about a 45 degree angle. And as you are just over past the lip of the exterior wall, your foot gives way and you plummet down into the yard. The dog, which had been heading back to the post, which I mentioned is down the long way of the building, is out of sight right now. I'm going to roll perception for the dog, and I'm going to describe to you what you can see from where you are. So you can see a certain amount of the chain is piled up down the long way of the building from you. On this exterior wall, you can see that the building is 2 stories above ground, and most of the windows above ground for the ground floor and the floor above are dark. However, there is one small window that you can tell is going into a cellar room that does have sort of an ambient, gentle, glowing light that seems to be shifting somewhat rapidly. Like, it doesn't seem like it's a solitary light or a flame. It's kind of changing in color and tone. It's getting brighter, and then it's getting dimmer, and then it's going black, and it's coming back on again. But it's this very fluctuating, very undulating light in one of these basement windows. And then from your position, just around the northwestern corner, you can see a door into the ground floor. What would you like to do?
Do I know how far the kind of stake holding the chain is?
So the stake holding the chain would be about, let's say, 70 feet away. The window that I described with the fluctuating light is just about 20 feet away from you. And then the door, the proper door to the ground floor of the building that you can see, is about 40 feet away.
I'll head to the window.
Okay. So you move to the window and you peer inside without making you make a perception roll. I would say that you can see sort of to your left, like on the left side of the room from where you're peering in. You can see this large, flat pane that is emanating this light. You can see images on it. The glow is changing. You can see people moving around in it. So maybe to Norm's perception, it's a glowing window. But seated on a plush chair, wearing a wizard's robe that looks very fancy, very, you know, soft, but is unbuttoned except for a single button over his stomach, you can see an elfin man with his hair tied back, and he's holding a large flagon of ale, and he's got, you know, a bowl of snacks.
Is the window open?
Yeah, so it's one of those cellar windows that can be pulled outward towards you, and with a proper check, I would say, like just a very low acrobatics check, I would say that you're able to sort of like scuffle your way in.
I'll try for it. That's a 15.
Oh yeah, with a 15, like you're able to get down thanks to being mostly bones. You're able to shuffle and shimmy your way down.
Should I make a stealth check to avoid the television watching gentleman?
Yeah, you can.
That is going to be a 14.
Okay. All right, so he does not react. What you see is that on the screen, he is watching. He's not watching TV per se. What he's watching are other people watching TV. So he like has a vision into like somebody's living room and he can see them watching TV. And he has like a little black remote control that he can change the channel. But rather than changing to actual TV channels, he's just constantly flipping between different rooms and different spaces where people are watching TV, and he's just watching what they're watching on TV.
Bit of a freak, but all right.
You are at the very back of the room where there is, you know, tables set out with other snacks and things like that. You can see a wooden door directly to your right that you could slip out through that he does not have a line of sight on. So you can very much get out of here if you want to.
Yeah, I'll slip through the door.
Okay. So you go to the door. It is locked from the inside, though. So give me a stealth roll for as you try the door, just because you're shaking it a little bit.
That is another 14.
Okay, so with the 14, I will say that, you know, you manage to jiggle the door. He doesn't really react to it. And then you notice, like, just turn the lock, gently open it, and you slip out. Outside the door, you can see that there is a little keypad for a password next to it. And there is a picture of a woman who looks very much like Liliana. But whereas Liliana had kind of a chestnut hair, this woman has dark black, you know, black as night hair. The picture depicts her in embrace, just kind of like a couple's picture with the man who you just saw in the room, but obviously he looks, in the picture, he looks much more put together. So you are currently in the basement of this house. You can see two other doors and a staircase leading upstairs. What would you like to do?
And I never asked her sister's name, right?
No, you didn't.
Well, that was foolish. I will head up the stairs.
Okay. So you head up the stairs and you arrive in a sort of foyer. You can see another staircase to your left going upward. You can see both the, to your left, you can see a, what's presumably the front door that has, you know, a little table on it, or a little table beside it. You can see to your right the back door that you could have come through as well. But you can see, give me an investigation roll.
17.
Okay. So the 17. You can see that on the wall between you and the front door with the side table, there is a painting, another painting that looks like it had Augie and his now ex-wife. However, the ex-wife is just kind of smeared as if somebody put paint thinner on her and just, you know, wiped her off of the painting. And you can also see that there is a note on the entrance table. Would Norm like to go and read it?
Well, sure.
Okay. So the note reads, Augie, I'm washing the paintings of you know who. I've got a list. One is in the master, one over each of your, quote, thrones, one in the hall. Am I missing any? I thought there were five, but let me know. Signed, Verfall. And then under that, in different ink and in different handwriting, you can see it scribbled. There's one more in the basement outside the man cave. I should change the password now that you mention it. I'll do it tomorrow. Parentheses. I know, but I will. Signed, Augie. P.S. There's more turpentine in the kitchen closet if you need it.
Oh, I'll pocket the note.
Okay. So from where you're standing next to the entrance, outside the window, you can see Cerberus is stalking around. Like, it just keeps doing these laps around the building. And then once its chain tightens, it just, you know, like a Metal Gear Solid patrol route. It just goes back around the perimeter and then continues until its chain tightens again and then reverses and goes back around the perimeter in the opposite direction. Right now, you can see a sort of sitting room. You can see a dining room on either side. What would you like to do?
Can I tell in which direction I think generally the stake holding the Cerberus would be?
Yeah, based on what you saw, the stake would be outside of the front door to the right of that.
And I'm next to the front door, correct?
Yes, you're currently by the front door.
Earlier, did I see a locking mechanism on it? Like holding the chain in place?
You know what? With your perception roll, I would say that yes, there is a locking mechanism that could release the chain from the wall itself. And there is also a locking mechanism that could unchain Cerberus just at the leash.
Could I tell if it was like a key lock or a code like the one I just stumbled across?
I think you would have seen that there was a keyhole on each. Whether or not they both required the same key or a different key, you don't know.
All right. I will head toward the dining area.
Okay. So you go into the dining area. You see different paintings around this very nice dining hall. You can see a display cupboard with fine china and things like that. You can see that there are some musical instruments. A lot of the paintings are in contrast to one another. Like, there are some that are very, you know, austere, of cities, of libraries, and then there are others that are very dark and foreboding. You can give me an investigation roll.
11.
Okay, so with an 11, you don't find anything that you're searching around to see if they might keep, you know, a key or anything else useful in here. But you don't notice anything in any of the cupboards or anything like that. It seems as if this room is just purely a dining room. So you do find some useful, you know, trinkets and knives and things like that, but nothing pertinent to what you're searching for.
All right, and there's nowhere out of this area?
No, there is a second door that leads back into the rear of the house, which you presume could lead into the kitchen area, but no, there's nothing else in here.
All right. I'll backtrack to by the to adjacent to the door, stopping to make sure there's no one around.
Sure, give me a perception roll.
9.
Okay, so with a 9, seems like nobody's immediately around.
All right. And you said there was a sitting area?
Yeah, so there's a sitting room. So the dining room was to the right of the entrance, and then the sitting room is in the other direction. So this is just sort of has a few bookshelves, has some chairs, a couple candles and things like that.
All right, I will head in that direction, and I'll start by searching through the bookshelves.
Give me an arcana roll.
9.
Okay, so with a 9, you're getting a very magical, just sort of ambient magical, like, vibe off of everything in this room. Like, it's clear that these people are, you know, demigods and deities. So, looking around, you do see some cookbooks, you do see some arcanums, but I don't know if there's anything that would be pertinent to Norm, necessarily. You do see some magical, like, songbooks. It's clear that these people, or at least Augie, is very well read. There are candles on every shelf, and yeah, but it just seems to be a very well-appointed, very comfortable reading room.
Okay, I'll sort of do a quick search around, see if there's anything other than, I mean, not within the bookshelves, but just over the course of the room.
Okay. Give me another investigation roll.
Oh, finally a good roll. Dirty 20.
Okay, so with a dirty 20, you realize that a number of the candles are actually magical candles, and that I mentioned that there are, you know, several of them, one on each shelf, they're all over the tables and things like that. You realize that each and every one of these candles is magical and that they are all a different type of magic and reflected by the color.
What colors are there?
Full spectrum of the rainbow. So they start with white, they go Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet, and then black. But you get magical vibes off of all of the candles.
Okay, can I try to determine to what effect?
Yeah, you can give me arcana roll.
11.
Okay, so with an 11, you can tell that these candles are meant to invoke, they're candles of invocation, that are meant to invoke and connect the person using them with some form of a deity. You can see that the black candles that I mentioned are the ones that are most burnt for whatever reason. However, all the other colors have been used to some extent, but not nearly as much as the black candles.
All right. Can I try to destroy the black candles in some way, like smash them on the ground and sort of like smush them with my feet?
Yeah, you absolutely can. So you pick up the candle, throw it on the ground, and I need you to make as you crush it under your feet, I need you to make a wisdom save.
Not bad. 19.
Okay, so with a 19, you, for a moment, you see the void which you came through before you woke up in this world. And from that void, it almost feels like you are being pulled back out of it again. Like, as you see it, like you have a moment where it feels like just for an instant you're in it and you can see all the other people that are in it right now. But then you feel like you're yanked back, and it feels like something has wrapped around your waist and pulled you back, and you slam backwards into the wall. And as you look up, as this thing releases you around your waist, you see a tentacle writhing out of the wall as if it just has been installed there. And that tentacle is writhing and reeling above you. What would you like to do?
What color is the tentacle?
The tentacle is black with, let's say, like purple/violet suckers.
Okay, I will do something a little unorthodox. I will grab the white candle and chuck it at the tentacle.
Okay, so you chuck it at the tentacle. Give me. Let's roll that as just a standard ranged attack.
Not good. I'm assuming I don't have proficiency with candles.
I'll give you proficiency. You're throwing something.
All right, then 7.
All right, so with a 7, you miss the tentacle completely. The candle shatters, and I need another wisdom saving throw.
16.
Okay, so this time with a 16, you're again pulled into a space, and this time you see the raven-haired woman from that painting by the door, and she's walking on a desolate path, and she is holding the hand of a young boy, and she looks not startled, but just confused to see you. And she just looks at you and says, "You're the one that was denied to me." And she just kind of turns her head sideways and just waves to dismiss you, like flips her hand upward. And you are flung back as if you were blown by a great gust of breeze. And then suddenly you fly back into the room and you are once again thrown backward, this time into the furniture. So the tentacle is still there and it's still writhing. And what are you doing as you, like, are caught by the couch this time from this expulsion?
Like, I slam into the couch?
Like, yeah, but it's a couch thing. It's like, it's almost as if the couch was, like, positioned specifically to catch you. So you're not going to take any damage or anything like that. But you are facing the tentacle.
I'm going to attempt to leave this room, knowing that nothing good has come of it.
Okay. So there are two entrances. There's the tentacle is at the back of the room from where you entered, like the far side. So there are two entrances from the room, one that leads out towards the back door, the other one that takes you back out through the front door. I'm assuming you want to go out through the one through the front door.
Yeah, I'm not messing around with this thing.
Okay, so as you come out of the room, you come out near the base of that staircase that leads up to the second floor of the building. You see a large metal humanoid, as if this person is wearing very, like, tight-fitting armor, but you realize that there isn't very much skin between the armor. You just see a lot of wires and cables, so this would be a warforged. But you see this very harried-looking warforged coming down, like rushing down the steps, just muttering to itself, "Oh, what now? What now? What now?" And he sees you and looks startled, and his head turns like a full 90 degrees to the left in confusion. "I'm sorry, is Master having a visitor? Did Master invite you?" And he just sounds very excited about that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's see who we both agree is Master in this situation. Who do you think is Master?
Oh, Master Augie. Master Augie is the master of this keep.
Oh, okay, yes, then we're on the same page. Yes, he did invite me, but I'm a touch early. He said, when you get here, if you get here early, let yourself in, look around. You know, that's why, I didn't bother to knock or anything, forgive me.
Ah, well. Give me a persuasion roll.
I am, pretty good at those. That's going to be a dirty one.
Actually, I was going to say, you could take advantage for a very specific reason.
Oh, in that case, 16.
Okay, so with a 16, he says, Master has not been the best at communicating lately. I am very glad that you are here. It is going to be... hopefully uplifting for Master to engage with somebody, especially since he has barely been engaging with me and has been insistent on only trying to engage with his ex-wife. Please, please, would you like me to show you around? I am currently busy with certain renovations. And you can see that he's holding, in one hand, like, a mop that reeks of turpentine and a bucket that is also clearly filled with, like, very dirty turpentine that's been used already.
Sure. You know, I don't hate a tour, but, you know, best keep it brief. You know, got a busy schedule.
Ah, yes. I suppose that when you meet Master, he will probably just want to spend time with you in the man cave. So it is best if I show you the rest of the keep. Please, follow me. And he puts the bucket and the mop down, propped against the wall, and he leads you upstairs. He says, I see that you already availed yourself of the sitting room. I will show you the guest rooms, where if you and Master stay up tonight.
Is the tentacle still in the sitting room?
Yeah, he hasn't seen it, though. We'll get back to that. but he leads you upstairs, and he takes you down first to the right and says, these are the guest rooms. Master had at one point hoped to turn one of them into a children's room, but that was not to be, unfortunately. So now it is an optional guest room, and this is also a guest room. Each guest room has its own bath, and he pokes his head in, I will need to work on that one's bathroom before you are able to appoint yourself of it. However, let me show you the master bedroom. And he also kind of starts like clanging his head a little bit with his fists and just going, I did not even finish the master bedroom. I did not finish. I cannot show you these things. They are unfinished.
Hey man, don't, no need to beat yourself up. I'm not like a VIP or a distinguished guest or anything else. If something's unfinished, I'm not going to be, you know, all uppity about it.
He says, no. Master is very sensitive. Master is very sensitive. If you were to see the things that I was appointed to refurbish, then he would cause a chain reaction of things that could cause Master to have another breakdown. As you can see, Master has been very busy. Come take a look. And he leads you to the first guest room, and you can see that this guest room is just filled with, like, easels and, like, unfinished paintings and sculptures and woodworking projects. And then he leads you to the second guest room. You can see that this guest room is filled with all kinds of different, like, maps and history books. And it just looks like the most two rooms that have been occupied by the most manic people that have just been staying up studying and doing all kinds of unfinished hobbies and projects. And then getting carried away with this whole thing, he runs to the other side of the house, towards the other side of the staircase, and he, like, says, look, those are just the guest rooms. Look at what he has done to his own room. And if you follow him, you can peer into this master bedroom that is basically the size of the two guest bedrooms put together with its own bath and everything like that. But you can see that it's also filled with all of these half-finished, like, cooking projects, like their pots and pans and things like that. There are books everywhere. You can see things sprawled out all over every inch of the floor. You can see figurines, models. You can see different things hanging. You can see horticultural experiments of different plants. And so surveying all of this, you see a large portrait of Augie and his now ex-wife gazing down, and you see Verfall just going, oh, no, I was not supposed to show you that. I'm supposed to wipe her from the portrait before anybody can see it. I've made a mistake.
And I'll say, hey, it's okay. I'm actually an art appraiser. That's how our old Og and I know each other. So I think it's better I see it, you know, before you go monkeying about with it, because that will give me the true value of the piece.
Okay. So first off, give me an investigation roll.
That is going to be a big old 5.
Okay, no, so with a 5?
A 3.
Okay, so with a 3, you feel like there's something peculiar about this room. At this point, it is getting towards sunrise. Like, it is getting, like, light is starting to appear outside, but you realize that this room is better lit than it should be for the time of day that it is. You realize that there's something in this room casting light, but there is no singular source of light. Do you proceed into... Right now, I'm picturing you and Verifal standing outside of the room. Are you proceeding in to look around further, or...
Yes, I'm going to behave as if I'm, like, kind of looking at the art, but in reality looking for any keys or anything that might be a place to... A place that someone would put the key.
Okay. So I would say that you can give me another investigation roll. That now that you're inside the room,
that's a 10.
Okay, so with a 10, since you are right up by the portrait, you can see that the key is right there, and you can also see outside of the room that there's sort of a balcony behind where the bed is appointed and all that, and you can see that outside on a table there is a pan flute that somebody was probably playing, like, outside on the balcony to relax.
And this is the second story, right?
Yes.
All right.
Before you do anything, I have to ask you a question.
Okay.
Does a 20 hit you?
Yeah.
Okay. So as you are peering around the room, and this is where you're, this is the penalty for your bad investigation roll. As you're locating the key, as you look and see the pan flute, something whips at the back of your head and just cracks you from behind, and it is going to do 15 force damage. Ooh. As you turn around and look back at the portrait, you can see that the arm of the ex-wife seems to have peeled itself off into reality and has extended itself and contorted itself just like the tentacle down below, and you realize that the coloration of the tentacle on the wall down below, the black and the sort of pink that I described, are just the sort of mutations of the colors from the canvas that have now stretched and contorted themselves into the shape of a tentacle, and that it is now writhing as if it were a physical extension and manifestation of her own arm, but mutated and twisted. And Verfall starts clanging his head and saying, "Oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no!" What would you like to do?
I'll just say, "Hey, man, it's okay." And I'm going to attempt to get around to the back side. Is the painting up on the wall, or is it like on an easel or something?
So the painting is mounted on the wall. What I would say is that you have two options. If you were to run at this point back towards the entrance to the room where Verfall is currently clanging his head, you would take another opportunity attack. Or if you were to run outside to the balcony or out through the balcony, you could try acrobatics and everything like that, but you don't know where Cerberus is at this point.
Is there a way to run outside while grabbing the key I saw?
Yes, so you can definitely grab the key. You're standing in front of the key right now. The question is, if you proceed back into the room and through the room to get back towards Verfall, you're leaving the pan flute behind, but you're taking the opportunity attack.
No, I'm going to head toward the outside. And I'm going to act like I was like, "Oh man, this is really going to affect the value of the painting."
All right, at this point, I would like you to roll initiative.
Great rolls continue, thick.
Starting out, you are on the balcony right now. You are standing right by the pan flute. Like, there's a little side table, you know, a couple chairs and everything like that. It's a very nice little sitting balcony. The painting has now both of the woman's arms flapping around as tentacles that are kind of blocking your path if you were to try to run back into the room to get out with where Verfall is. And Verfall is currently standing, clanging his head. He got highest in the initiative order, but I don't think he really knows what to do because he's having a bit of a panic attack. So I will say that on your turn, you can use a free action to try to persuade him to do something, and I'll kind of treat it as a held action. He'll take it after your turn. So that being said, it is your turn next. So you're on the balcony. You can make a perception roll to try to see where Cerberus is down below, or if you have another thing you want to try, let me know. But right now you are facing the eastern side of the building, so the side of the building that you couldn't see from your overlook before, because they loved their balcony facing the sunrise. It's very nice of them. They would wake up together and watch the sunrise and drink coffee.
Sure, I'll make a perception roll. That's going to be a 22.
With a 22, I would say that you can tell, like, you can hear the growling, and you can hear the sort of, like, heavy padded footsteps of Cerberus, and you can tell that he is just around the corner to the north of where you are, but you can tell that he is moving away from you.
All right, then I will look at my companion and say, "Look, I promise if you just keep these tentacles at bay, it will definitely help the value of the painting.
So he is going to say, of course, but you must promise to tell my master that I've already changed the appearance of these guardians. And he is going to clang his hands slash clap his hands together, and you see this light form in front of him, and it takes shape of the woman from the portraits, except just glowing light. And that spiritual guardian is going to rush forth and attempt to attack the tentacles. So she hits, and you can see the tentacles very much recoil in agony and anguish from her contact. So that was your free action. What would you like to do for your action, bonus action, movement?
First, for my bonus action, I'm going to replace the pan flute with the one that Liliana gave me.
Okay.
Do they look similar?
No, because she gave you a kazoo.
Oh, well, then I'll just pocket that.
You can give me an arcana roll on both of them if you want to.
On the one I just grabbed, that's going to be an 18.
Okay. So with the one you just grabbed, you can tell that, as Liliana said, if you can beat a performance check of 12, you can immediately pacify an aggressive, intelligent non-humanoid, and you would have advantage on one persuasion roll against it.
Oh, my negative 3 is really coming in handy here. Then I will... I have the key. I'm going to just jump over the balcony.
Okay. Give me an acrobatics check, and if you pass the acrobatics check, I will let you make a stealth check.
10. I will use my slow fall ability if needed.
Oh, well then, yeah, that would absolutely give you advantage. In fact, slow fall ability would just mean that you can just make the stealth check. I didn't even realize you had that. My mistake.
That's a nat 20.
Okay. So you touch down like Jackie Chan. Like, you just do a perfect, like, your toes touch the grass, and you roll into the grass so smoothly, so gracefully, that the grass barely even bends under you. So you're currently at the 3 o'clock position of this rectangular building, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can remember that the post that Cerberus is tied to is pretty much at the 7 o'clock position. And you know that Cerberus is currently around the 11 o'clock position. And based on what you heard up above before you jumped, he is going counterclockwise right now. But if you run fast enough, you can make it to the post and unlock it potentially before he makes it to the post.
I will attempt to do so. I don't know. If I need to wait till my next turn, that's fine.
No. We can forego the turn order officially for the time being. I will say that because he's not trying to move very fast, he will be just within your realm of movement, so...
For what it's worth, I have my unarmored movement as well for being a monk.
So what I will say is, Cerberus is a very fast creature. So what you do is you skid up, you run around the building the opposite way from where Cerberus is. You are going to skid into his line of sight because he's going to be on that side of the building facing the post no matter what. He will be just one turn's worth of movement, so you will have one turn's worth of actions to determine how you're going to deal with this. So you come skidding around the corner. You reach where the chain is bolted into the exterior wall. You can see Cerberus lock eyes with you 60 feet away, and Cerberus has 60 movement speed for his turn. What is Norm doing first?
Just going to try to quickly unlock the lock that's holding him in place.
All right, give me a dex save.
11.
So with an 11, you are fumbling with the keys. You're like trying to get it in, but you're not. First you put it in the wrong way and it only goes halfway in, and then you're trying to pull it, yank it out, and... By the time you finally get it in, Cerberus is right on top of you. So you still have a bonus action. What would you like to do with your bonus action?
I will spend a key point to use Patient Defense.
Okay. What does that do?
It basically gives a disadvantage on attacks against me.
Okay. That's going to come in handy right about now. So Cerberus launches, has closed up the distance with you, and he's able to do 3 bite attacks, which should not be super surprising. So each of them is going to have disadvantage. So first one is only a 14 to hit.
14 does not hit.
Okay, great. Second one is only a 13 to hit. And the third one is a 16 to hit.
Yes, that does hit.
Okay, so one head gnashes at you, and you manage to, like, tickle the underside of the first dog head's, like, chin and just swoop a shoulder out of the way. The second one comes, and you're scratching the forehead as it goes downward, and you move your shoulder out of the way. But then the third one comes up above over all of them and just manages to clamp down on your head, Norm. And you are going to take 11 piercing damage.
Ooh.
Plus 6 fire damage.
Oof. I'm still up.
That's good. So the dog rears back, and you can see flames roiling in all of its mouths, and it is your turn again. So you're still standing there by the post. You can also, now that it's kind of reared back, you can see that there's a keyhole on the leash as well, on the collar. So for your action, you have a lot of options. What would you like to do?
I'll try to, as it's roiling back, I'll try to quickly reach up and unlock the collar, since that will ultimately cause less noise once it escapes.
Okay. So give me a dex save as you try to get the key through the keyhole.
Oh my goodness. 6.
Okay. Yet again, it's, you know, your hands, you just managed to deftly avoid all of this, but as your hands are trying to get the key into the keyhole, you know, it's moving around as the dog's heads are growling and their throats are kind of, and you can't quite get the key right in, and you still have your bonus action and your movement, but you are not able to get the key in. I will say that you can attempt with your bonus action to get the key in, but it's going to be a slightly higher dex save.
I will try to do that. Still not great. 13.
So, unfortunately, for the regular action, it was going to be a 12, but because you're trying again with the bonus action, it increased to a 15. So you're still fumbling and trying to get the key in there, but just as you're doing that, so you still have your movement if you want to try to move away or use your movement to disengage or something like that. You are right by the building. You could try to climb up.
Would I be able to climb out of its reach?
Let me see. Range. Yeah, it only has a reach of 5 feet. I don't see any indication that this thing could climb the wall. So if you could scamper up, like even with a climb speed of 15, you could potentially get high enough with a good athletics or acrobatics check to get out of its range.
I will do so, understanding that I may take an attack of opportunity.
Yes.
My acrobatics rolls 12.
Okay, so with a 12, I will say that's good enough to scamper up, but you will take 1 bite attack from the creature. So it does get a 22 to hit on the bite attack. Okay, and that's going to do 7 piercing damage.
Oh, that was at 1 HP.
And 4 fire damage.
I mean, I'm down.
Okay, so Norm, you fall back down into the garden as Cerberus grabs you by the leg and just yanks you off the wall as you're beginning to clamber up. You hear Abby say, "Hey, don't worry, don't worry. We got the things we need. It's just, we can still get out of here. Maybe not we, but, you know, we is like you and the collective team. We, you get it." And that stammering, amidst the gnashing of your bones and the tearing of the skin that Abby represents, are the last things that you hear until it all goes silent and you are back in the void again. And as you proceed into the darkness, as you are walking back through that threshold, you see somebody walking past you. What do you tell them?
Let the dog off the leash.
All right, Cody. Thanks for playing. Okay, welcome to the show, Nathan York.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So, tell us a little bit about your character. Tell us his name and where he's from.
All right, let's crack into it. So, I'll be playing my character in this campaign as Chris Single, the recently divorced and very sad ex-Santa Claus.
My life was once peaceful and productive. I oversaw the production of all the toys for the children of the world. But then the demon knight, Krampus, stole the heart of my Mrs. Claus. She got the house, the factory, and the corporation. And now I'm on a quest to make myself strong enough to handle anything. The best revenge is having a sculpted body and conquering evil. And I will not fail in this task.
How Chris Single got his groove back. That's right. I love it.
He's going to have a revenge body for the ages.
All right. Well, tell us, how did Chris Single die?
Chris took over ownership of a restaurant and gastropub, and he started working on brewing his own beers. And during the construction, he had a mishap and fell into one of the large filled tankers of beer. And he attempted to drink his way out, but could not succeed. So, Chris's crossing remains not fully developed.
Does he have a brother named Chris Landfill? Or Chris Double?
You know what? Let's say that that's possible at this point. I was going to add that, well, when we get into it, I had an idea here about this one.
All right. Well, after Chris valiantly tried to drink his way out of a vat of beer, all the hops filling up his every single orifice and tasting that deep inside of him, he suddenly, all of that vanished, all of that sensation, all of that taste, all of that flavor. And there was just nothing. There was just cold and darkness and a room where Chris could sense other people sitting in it. And Chris is compelled to get up and begin walking through the darkness. And in the darkness, he can just barely make out a threshold, a doorway that he's passing through. And as he passes through that doorway, he feels somebody passing by him who says, "Take the dog off the leash." Does Chris say anything back? Does he do anything?
Wait, Norm, is that you? Is that my Postmaster General?
And there's just a moment of silence, and then you just hear a crackle. Chris Single, I think, would recognize this as the sound of a wood popping on a warm fireplace that's been lit for some time. And you smell something. And you hear a voice saying, oh, master, he's awake. He's awake. He seems to be waking up.
Oh.
The new body has
formed. Oh. This isn't the Lazarus Pit I'm used to. Where am I else?
Oh, easy there, easy. Why don't you have a nice sip of cocoa?
Cocoa? Is that a delicious draft of some kind?
And so you open your eyes to a very well-appointed reading room. Walls, installed bookshelves lining every wall, even over the door jamb. There is a fireplace with a crackling fire. You have been laid on this long couch. It almost feels like a psychiatrist's office. You're on this lovely leather couch and you're laid out. And on a side table next to your head, there is a mug of something steaming. And when you look at it, it's a brown liquid substance that, yes, is a cup of warm cocoa. And sitting in the armchair facing you is a man in a wizard's robe. He looks like the wizard from the old Cookie Crisp branding, where it's got like stars and all that. He's got like the wizard's hat, but he has a very debonair smile. And he glances at you and says, please, please. I very want to great lengths to make that cocoa for you.
In my world, we called it hot chocolate.
Oh, if you would prefer hot chocolate. Hot chocolate is a slightly different concoction. And he says, whoa, 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 Barry, we don't need to lecture the man. Does this not look like a man that knows cocoa?
I don't know if this world has one of me, but I used to be known as Santa Claus, but you can call me Chris.
Ah, you see, every world has some form of you, and every world has some form of me, it seems. My name is Agma. You can call me Augie. And he holds out a hand towards you.
I predator handshake.
All right, let's roll for that. Let's get some sleight of hand action going. Actually, you know what? I think a predator handshake, since you called it out, that's pure strength, baby.
Yeah.
That's pure strength. All right, what do you get?
That's a 13.
All right, that is perfect. I was thinking to myself, we need a 25 for a good predator handshake to combine. I got a 12, you got the 13. So that is perfect. So you both clasp, and you see the Warforged in the corner of the room by the door. He just begins to clap his hands, which produces more of a clanging noise. And says, oh, this is delightful. Master Augie, I am so glad to see you making friends with the new guest. Yes, now about our guest, Mr. Single. Couple questions for you. And you hear a voice in your head.
Hey, Chris? It's Abby here. Could you just give me a second? I might want to help you out with answering some of his questions. Just give me a second.
And just as I've described before, just like Neo in the Matrix learning Kung Fu, your eyes roll back for just a second, and you are downloaded with every memory of your predecessors in this show. Augie sees this and says, huh, that's interesting. So tell me, you are Chris Single. Where are you from, Mr. Single?
Well, I am from many places, it seems. But currently, I am no longer from the place I was. So let's just say I'm from around.
And if I were to tell you that the name of this world, such as it is, with all of its complicated geographies, overlapping planes, and so on and so forth, does the name of the world Umbar raise any bells?
I'm not familiar with Umbar, but I'm getting some information. I'll have more information shortly.
Yes, it's interesting that you bring up information. You see, I'm something of a scientist myself, and my buddy Vary here and I, we've been observing you, and we've come across some very interesting data.
Yes, we were hoping that Master's ex-wife would show up to collect you upon your death in our front yard. However, she did not appear, and then, shortly thereafter, the body of your predecessor turned into you, and now you are here. So that might explain why Master's ex-wife didn't...
Let's not go into that whole thing. Let's just deal with the fact that something here is not following the typical cycles of life and death, and you don't seem to be from this world. So, as a scientist, I am deducing that you are coming here as the result of some kind of an interdimensional break in the life and death cycle. I think that you might be causing the anomalies that have been happening around my abode.
You think I'm responsible for the anomalies around your abode? The giant dog? The weird tentacles?
Oh, no, that's... The weird tentacles? Yes. The dog? No, the dog is a beloved... Beloved pet.
So here in Vanilla, you would say that tentacle walls are abnormal. Is that right?
Yes, that is the result of a dimensional incursion. Something from between the dimensions is sort of riding on your tail feathers or following your draft into this world.
Get a good look at me. I don't have anything riding on my tail feathers.
I start flexing.
Though I'm certainly not meaning to accuse you of intentionality with regards to these things, but your being here is evidence that you are traversing something that should not be able to be traversed, and something might just be able to follow in your way.
Something could. Something couldn't. Who's to know? What I know, and what's important here, is that you need to help me.
Yes, I actually think I do. You're right on the money there, because based on the data I was able to collect, if you keep dying, and I'm talking not just to you, but future yous, those interdimensional breaks and those interdimensional collapses and collisions are going to get worse and worse.
Well, since it's only going to get worse every time I die, I guess my goal will then be to not die, which seems like a pretty good goal.
That is a pretty good goal. I agree with you there. The problem is that, it does seem that people are catching wind of this whole thing, and there are some people that might want to take advantage of it. Why? Because human nature, that's why. Everyone sees an opportunity in everything unusual. It's sort of unfortunate.
Well, Augie, between you and me, since we're proper chaps now, I need you to understand something. Something that took a long time for me to get. Something that took a lot of growth, a lot of pain, and a lot of work. But I don't think she's coming back.
Give me a persuasion roll.
19.
You see him sit upright and go stiff, and his lower lip quivers. You know, one other person who isn't coming back is another one of my chaps, is what you said, my chums. It's Dr. Frankenfooter isn't coming back either, and well, I know we searched your belongings, pardon me, but you were dead in my yard.
Master, are you going to be okay?
Yes, Barry, I've got this. Here.
And he hands you back the letter from the marvelous Professor Frankenfooter that Stephen Hark had in his belongings when he was dug up way back when.
The marvelous Professor Frankenfooter, he's tied into this because his father did a lot of research on these sorts of things. On interdimensional barriers and the things in between things. If there's anybody that might know what have caused you to interrupt the cycle of death and give you rest, give you peace, it's going to be him.
Well, as I understand it, Frankenfurter is back in the other realm, and he's somewhere in the large city near the center of the island. So not here in vanilla or in chocolate. He's in the Vishan Empire. Vishnan.
I think you need to find your way to him.
And I think the only way I can do that is if I gather her things and bring them with me.
Another persuasion roll, please.
Okay. I'll use persuasion this time. It's a 9.
You see his lower lip quiver again. Those are two mutually exclusive issues. I think that you have plenty on your plate. You'll be pursued by people that might want to take advantage of your unique interdimensional,
stand up.
Being and energy.
Come here. Bring it in. Sometimes you need to just let it out.
I think he's going to stand up.
And I'm going to embrace him.
Give me another persuasion roll, this time at advantage.
Oh, that's great. That's a 19.
Okay. He begins sobbing into your shoulder, like right in that like crook between the deltoid and like where the pec really starts to like come out.
She was in so much of a rush to get away from me, she didn't even take her dog. I can't believe she would hire a random adventurer, and she didn't even hire you yourself. You have her sister's kazoo. Your sister hired you.
It's gonna start choking up Chris.
She never even told me she was miserable. She didn't tell me she had feelings for him. She got it all. She got the corp. The factory. I can't even go by my real name anymore.
Oh.
I never worked hard enough to communicate with her. I compartmentalized too much. I can't believe this is how I'm learning how to communicate is about what I lost.
I didn't know it hurt again this fresh so soon.
It's so sad that you have to die to save our world.
Sorry. Circle back on that one more time.
As long as you're alive, and he like slurps up just like, you know, the wettest, snottiest like sniffle. He says, as long as you're alive, the breach that's gonna allow the monsters through from the pan-dimensional spaces, it won't shut. You have to die to save us. And the longer you stay, the more of that monster, The groom, it's gonna keep coming through, and eventually it'll come all the way through.
Well, I'm sorry that it hurts so. But we're gonna need to check those numbers again. Because if your original hypothesis was that our continued deaths were creating the larger and larger rift, and now you say that my life itself continues this rift, we're gonna need to figure it out. Because if you kill me, or I die, someone's just going to take my place. Or at least, that's how things have been going.
No. You see, you coming through is what widens the rift each time. Your predecessor dying, because, let me guess, when you died, you were in a room. And that room probably had people that came before you, didn't it?
It was really just a dark passageway.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that passageway keeps getting filled up as more and more of you come through. And that passageway, it's throwing things out of balance between the dimensions. And when you walk through the threshold, guess what? That's just another widening for more things to come through after.
Okay. So my original plan stands then. Don't die.
Yeah, it would be really helpful if you didn't. But, you know, have you run into anybody from the Church of Honda Days?
Well, funny you should mention. Back in a ways back, Stephen, this is the first life here, woke up in a grave. And he was met by the Church of Honda Days and Father Tully on the rock. Ring any bells?
Oh, one of you did meet the Church of Honda Days. So when you met the Church of Honda Days, you didn't happen to sign any papers or anything like that, did you?
Let me remember back. I mean, I got this paper signed. I hold out the letter.
So he looks at your passport, and the passport now magically has Chris Single's name on it, whereas it previously had Stephen Hark and then subsequently had Smash and Pam. As previously covered, the passport's blood magic allows the name to update magically with whoever is occupying the body that the blood came from. Oh boy. They have a means of tracking you from death to death, then. If Tully got a hold of some of your blood to create this, he might have just held on to it. The Church does do that in order to assist and cooperate with the Order Infernus on warrants for arrest and manhunt.
And these two organizations are uniquely tied together. Is that right?
They have a bit of a symbiosis, as it were.
I remember hearing something about a machine that Frankenfurter was supposed to build for the Church of Honda Days, and something about the Crimson Order, is that right?
Yes, and that machine is part of the reason why I was able to hazard some hypotheses with regards to the nature of your being and how you are affecting and causing this rift and interdimensional blending, shall we say. Because I did assist the Dr. Frankenfooter, the father of the two Frankenfooters, with his research into the dimensional gate, which was supposed to at first act as a magical siphon to empower and exponentially increase the efficacy of magic in our world and across our realms.
However, his son repurposed that into a get-rich-quick scheme, hoping to steal inventions, tchotchkes, and other fancy items from other dimensions. It seems he turned it on only once, according to legend, ran away with the thing and treasure that he found in it, and now there is a manhunt for him for embezzling from the church to build and turn on the machine from which he stole key components.
Well, that sounds like an enterprising individual right there. You know, you gotta take advantage of the situation you're given. Sounds like he might not have been given the gifts that his father had. So he used what he had and made off with some money. In my world, I'd put him on the naughty list. But I don't know if I'd spend the entire time chasing him down on a crusade. Lawbreakers in every place, every city, in the grimy depths, in the dark alleys. Frankenfurter made off with an item. And while that's bad, I want to get the answers from the horse's mouth, if you know what I mean.
I agree. I was about to suggest that if you know that you're walking into a trap, sometimes the best way out of a trap is through it. That being said, I would say that the fact that you have a letter summoning you to the location of this contraption seems to say to me that you yourself might be the necessary component that he abandoned. So, he might be luring you there in some kind of a plot as you as some kind of a living mule, as it were, to deliver the components back to him so he can turn the machine back on at his own leisure.
Huh. I'm just components then in his machine. I'd put the things into stark perspective. Now, you knew his father. You worked with him. Did you ever meet the young whelp?
Did I meet the young whelp? Yes. He was not nearly as serious or diligent as his father.
Well, that happens to the best of us. I can be silly myself. But this matter sounds more serious than I'd originally thought. I mean, you know, and how I just downloaded basically all the memories of my predecessors on this plane. Smashing Pam seemed like a really cool girl. A real strong warrior.
Yes, and that does seem to be a benefit of the body exchange, that it seems like the memories are imprinted on the body that you're all sharing. As for the marvelous Professor Frankenfurter, if I can be candid, I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, least of all a dead friend such as Dr. Frankenfurter. The young lad seemed as if he might have been more disposed towards being an artist, a bard of some kind, perhaps. His father, on the other hand, was a strict taskmaster. Had high expectations for the boy, but I think that it was driven more by his own pride than actual belief. All in all, they did not have the best relationship, and the two were estranged for much of Dr. Frankenfurter's later years, especially when the doctor slipped into darker and darker experimentation. I stopped accepting him into my realm as those experiments took hold of him and his mind. And I wish I could have seen him again. Perhaps I should have talked to him, rather than letting him go down that road. I was walking my own dark path, I suppose.
That dark path is going to see some light. Soon, I hope. Maybe you get yourself into town. Maybe you start a band with some friends. Get your feelings out.
I think that's been among the projects that I've busied myself with, but I think it's time to stop busying myself and time to start working. Can I see you out?
Yeah, but I'm gonna need that loot.
And he reaches into his robe and he hands you the loot. If you ever see Raven, tell her I understand.
I will. I will tell her. Also tell her that you'll be fine, because I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your shoulders. I like dust his shoulders. You're a strong, capable man, and I believe in you, just as all the children of the world believe in me. You'll get through this. Now, since you have so much information about this catastrophe, or calamity, or whatever C word you want to use here, what do you anticipate we do, and how do we stay connected? Because I think you will be a good resource once I get into the contacting of Frankenfurter.
I can certainly give you that the kazoo that Liliana gifted you will take you to the Feywild, wherever you might be. However, it will not bring you back here. where the Feywild rests in a parallel to your material plane. And so, wherever you use that kazoo, you will be teleported to the equivalent space in the Feywild. However, if you want to come back here, Fairy, get me the sticks of transference.
Yes, sir. At once.
Fairfall runs out of the room, and you hear some clanging as he runs up the steps. I'll give you 5 magical items that will give you the opportunity, upon breaking them, to perform a dance move that will bring you back here if you perform it correctly. And so, I need you to make a perception check or a performance check. You can take your pick as he tries to teach you the dance by the time Verifall comes back.
I got an 11.
Okay, not quite good enough. I'm going to need another one. So he runs through it again. He runs through the dance with you, and he's like, not quite.
That's a 20. Dirty 20.
He says, I need you to loosen up the hips a little bit. Put some shoulders into it. There you go. Give it... I want you to stir that batter, baby.
This is to the song Higher and Higher from Wet Hot American Summer.
Make that butter. Make that butter. That's right.
Like this, right?
Oh, baby, you're getting it. So you hear the clanging footsteps of Verifall as he comes back down the steps, and he holds out 5 glow sticks to you of various colors. And he says, all you need to do is snap them and start to dance with them in your hand. And if you perform the dance correctly, it'll bring you right back here.
Well, that is incredibly helpful. And as I said, we're proper chaps now. You're a good friend, Noggy, and I hold you in my heart, and will be thinking of you, and hoping that you will feel less pain day by day. And if you see me, when I do that dance and snap that stick, I will embrace you as a friend. A big old bear hug.
So he returns the bear hug, and after a very long time, and Verifall also joins in the bear hug, so it's a nice, you know, group hug. Yeah.
Bring it in.
You are led upstairs. He plays the pan flute for you to calm down Cerberus. He undoes the collar, and Cerberus goes running off into the darkness, and you see a flare as Cerberus goes through a portal and returns to his true master. And Augie and Verifall walk you to the edge of the forest. And he says, here, I can help you out with that. Would you mind handing me the kazoo?
If I give you this, and you use it, will I lose it?
Silly boy, of course not. You'll wake up with it. And he takes the kazoo, taps your head, and the same sensation that you remember experiencing as Norm happens again, where you feel like just the barest touch of it on your forehead. But somehow you feel like you're falling backwards, and rather than rushing towards the ground itself seems to be lifting up like a shelf to throw you off. And as you plummet into now twilight sunset skies, you can see the natural amphitheater thicket with Miss Cleo lying asleep, curled up in a ball, waiting for you. And as you touch down on the ground, you blink and you open your eyes with the sensation that you never left. It feels like that whole thing could have been a dream. Except that when you look at your chest, you see first that both of your hands are clasped over your chest, holding the kazoo and the glow sticks. But then further down past your hands on your stomach, you see a curled up millipede. Thank you for listening to D&D Versus. This episode features Trevor Hegstrom as Silvo, Cody Miller as Norm Alguy, and yours truly, Yanata Blue, as your Dungeon Master. D&D Versus is not affiliated with Wizards of the Coast. Support our podcast and get access to additional content at patreon.com/D&D Versus. Our next episode comes out July 10th.